Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
The summer sun is drawing Bostonians out of their buildings and onto the Emerald Necklace and other parks, but not so much the Rose Kennedy Greenway. The 30-acre park atop the Big Dig has suffered from brutal design critiques since it started coming together a few years ago. But now some critics are attributing the park's failure to thrive to the neighborhoods around the park as much as the park itself. WBUR's Adam Ragusea starts us off with a walk around the Greenway.
In Boston's burgeoning College of Greenway Criticism, Robert Campbell remains the dean.
In my opinion, what the Greenway has amounted to is a big series of great big vacant lots.
Even as the Mass Horticultural Society's flowers bloom, the Globe architecture critic's critiques wither.
So I have found it increasingly disappointing, and we were promised...
That is suburban landscaping, you know, the garden.
And then there's this sort of pathetic attempt to make a kind of a civic space with a little square of towers, you know.
3 years ago, Campbell was lamenting about how the Greenway had been split into four separate parks among four separate designers, thus confounding by committee what he argues should have been the coherent linear vision of a single inspired mind. Hence today's dominant critical narrative. The Greenway is a fractious coalition of four parks amounting to not much of anything but a gussied up median strip. But when I walked the Greenway a few beautiful afternoons ago, a simpler narrative occurred to me. The thing starts with the Chinatown Park and gets going in earnest kitty corner from South Station. Traffic and the sound of my own footsteps, the whole financial district stretch of the park was neat, bright, exposed, and empty. Saw what appeared to be one office worker lingering over a book and a brown bag, and this one jogger. That was it. Once again, Robert Campbell.
For $3 million a year, we're maintaining it for a handful of skateboarders and joggers. Those are the people who come when not on a programmed activity. Those are the people who use it, and they are very, very few.
You put it that way, and it sounds pretty dismal. But as I headed north on the Greenway, things started to sound a little more promising. I crossed Milk Street in front of Rose Wharf, and it felt like I entered a different Greenway. Half a dozen kids splashed in the rings fountain, concentric circles of water jets set in the pavement that fire in unpredictable patterns. About twice as many parents, older siblings, or other caretakers looked on, smiling and sunning. Walking further north, a busker played to a captivated toddler and his mom. A few more steps up, and another half dozen kids waited in line for the merry-go-round. And when I finally got to the North End parks, with the trickling canal and the pergola, it was all babies and dogs and dads and moms and tourists with their yellow Cheers bags and old Italian men with their cigars. It was inhabited, the polar opposite of where I started. What changed? Was it the design? Or was it that I moved from an area around which not many people happen to live to an area where some people actually do live? Bob Campbell.
I've always been so impressed in Paris. Of course, they spend a lot more money on parks in Paris than they do here. But whenever they build a park, they build new housing all around it. They can't imagine one without the other. That's true of Central Park, too. There are densely populated residential neighborhoods on three sides of Central Park, pouring a kind of critical mass of people in there. And when you get a critical mass of people, that attracts other people because there are people to watch.
You know, the Greenway wasn't part of, okay, let's put a plan together of where people would normally come to and intersect, which happens in a lot of things like a Central Park or a Common or something like that.
Greenway Conservancy Chairman Peter Mead says he's just building where the old highway dropped him off. And even if planting a park where people don't yet live is a little like writing a book on spec, Mead is hopeful his manuscript might soon get picked up.
As you look at the part of the Greenway that you were talking about first coming up from Chinatown, there will be more people living there over the next several years.
Are you confident that's going to happen?
As confident as anybody can be, given where our economy is. When housing construction starts again, I think there are very serious projects on that part of the near the Greenway that will be ready to go.
In the meantime, at the inhabited end, Children and fountains bubble together like a primordial soup, the building blocks of what people like Robert Campbell hope could evolve into one of the great urban public spaces.
Excuse me. It looks like there's a stroller convention here.
Oh, no, we just all sort of live in the North End and come down here.
I spotted Rory Bonzani blowing bubbles with her toddler under the pergola.
Looks like everybody's having a nice time.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Do you come here often?
This is actually my first time here.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. Every time I walk by, I say, I can't wait to go.
You lived in the North End for a while?
Yeah, like almost 10 years.
Well, welcome to the Rose Kennedy Greenway, Rory, where the new slogan just may be, better late than never.
That's WBUR's Adam Ragusea. So, listeners, have you been part of one of those stroller conventions on the Greenway? Or have you stayed away? What would it take to instill activity throughout the whole length of the park? We'd love to hear from anyone with an opinion, but particularly from residents of the North End or the Harbor Towers or any of the other neighbors already down there. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. We're at Radio Boston. Well, planners have been working on a set of guidelines for development in the Greenway District. Their draft is up for public comment right now. You can see a copy of it or a link to it at our website, wbur.org/Boston. And the zoning blueprint for dozens of parcels adjacent to the Greenway calls for projects of various heights and densities, residential, commercial, and retail. The process hasn't been without its controversies and its tensions. So joining me now is one of the chief authors of those guidelines. He's Matthew Littell. He's a principal at UTIL Architecture and Planning, which conducted the Greenway District Planning Study for the Boston Redevelopment Authority. Welcome to Radio Boston, Matthew.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is a longtime observer and critic of the Greenway planning and design process, Tom Piper. He's principal research scientist at MIT's Department of Urban Studies and Planning. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Tom.
Thank you, Megan.
Well, let me just start off with the premise that Adams lofted in his piece there, that the best way, perhaps, to revitalize the Greenway is through allowing more housing along the, you know, as much of the park as possible. Matthew Littell, your response to that?
I think there's a couple of answers to that call. I actually agree that, like any public space, the Greenway will benefit from diversified uses. It's predominantly office right now, with a few notable exceptions. You mentioned the Boston Harbor Towers. I think it was also mentioned in the piece that Chinatown, the residential uses around Chinatown will continue to grow. I think that will enhance the park. We've also, in one location, part of our guidelines, there is some bonus given to residential use on one particular plot, the so-called Richardson Block, where I believe there's some incentivized height there in order to incentivize residential use, which we think could diversify a part of the Greenway near the financial district, which is less diverse than desired.
And when you say incentivized height, you mean they can build a little higher so as to build housing there? Or?
Precisely.
Okay. Tom Piper of MIT, housing the way to go for the Greenway?
Absolutely. Yeah. You can't disagree with Bob Campbell. The study that Matthew's worked on mentions missing teeth. Well, it's not missing teeth down there. It's missing people. And another great observer of cities, a guy named Larry Beasley from Vancouver, 30 years in the business of planning Vancouver, was in town the other day, and he looked at the artery. And to give you an idea how big the artery is, Beasley said that it looks like Boston has built a public open space that could accommodate 60,000 new residences, residents in housing around it. That's how big a facility it is. It's huge.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard a number like that. I mean, it's a business number. I'm going to, the guy's cool. He's smart. He's done this before, and he said 60,000.
Well, let me just ask you a quick question about that.
That translates into 40 million square feet of new development.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Larry Beasley and Vancouver, and I know that our own Adam Ragusea has actually looked a lot into that, and one of the reasons why they can get so much density in Vancouver is because they're building pretty tall there. But we have some height restrictions that we have to deal with here in Boston. Is that, I mean, you're giving me a stare. Okay, well, on that stare, we'll come back to that.
Let me just say that you're not going to get 40 million square feet of new development down there. But what I'm trying to say is this is the scale that we've built this public open space to. If you're talking about actually getting people not missing teeth on the artery, that's the scale at which you have to think. It was never, ever thought of in those terms, ever.
Okay, well, we'll come back to more of that with both you, Tom Piper, of MIT's Department of Urban Studies and Planning, and Matthew Littell, principal at UTIL Incorporated Architecture and Planning. We are talking about the development of the Rose Kennedy Greenway. Can we get the most out of the park without inviting thousands of people to actually live and work alongside it? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll be right back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. A little later this hour, we'll spend some time with Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist Paul Harding. He's a North Shore native, so stick with us for that. But right now, we're back talking about the Rose Kennedy Greenway and plans for development along its margins. With me is Matthew Littell. He's principal at UTIL Architecture and Planning, which conducted a Greenway District Planning Study for the Boston Redevelopment Authority. And also Tom Piper, principal research scientist at MIT's Department of Urban Studies and Planning. And Matthew Littell, I want to get to you in just a second, but Tom Piper, if you could just briefly sort of elaborate, you've looked at the design guidelines that were recently issued, and as you hinted at pretty strongly before the break, your chief criticism is that because there are height restrictions along the Greenway, we could never actually build enough housing to get people to come in the droves that we'd like to see.
Well, first of all, I want to congratulate Matthew on the plan. He was given a very difficult assignment given the restrictions. And so I don't really want to talk about restrictions. I want to talk about what it is that the three of us might think about how to make this thing work. And so it's been zoned for 75% open space, big mistake to begin with because, you know, it's that huge. You know, it would take something like 40 million square feet to make that work to some standard. What's really missing in all of this is the standards. What does the city really want? How much activity would they like to see if it's uniform across the entire 27 acres? You're going to require 40 million square feet, according to experts. I think that what you have down there is a series of very, very key nodes to develop to some standard that the city has yet to specify in terms of what it really does want. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the key to this. And somebody should be focusing on that. And when I say these nodes, we know what they are. They're at the north and south stations, and they're the parking garages along the line. And by the way, these are very, very strategically located sites, and they're mostly associated with public transportation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're looking at a really good opportunity. And then in that context, which I really don't think the study was really allowed to address, you have real opportunity on Central Artery to make this thing work.
Matthew Littell, short of that 40 million square feet that Tom Piper is talking about, are there other ways of encouraging development, other forms of development that could revitalize the Greenway?
Absolutely. And I agree with Tom's assertion that there just isn't actually the space to provide the sheer amount of, let's say, human beings to just fill it up. And so what we have to look to, and this was something that was uncovered in our study, by the way, which was that even if in our most aggressively imagined scenarios for certain available sites, if we maxed out the area, we still weren't getting enough people just in and of themselves to do something about this. And so what we have to look for are much more strategic kinds of opportunities that occur at the ground plane. So at a base, you know, very fundamental things like locating active uses on the edges, one cafe to change the habits that people have about how they use the space. Another big one is we don't seem to have enough people there to fill the space. how do we actually import people, and what are the reasons that we, you know, what kinds of excuses can we make to get people down here?
Adam had a couple of them in the piece that we heard earlier that some of them seem to be very simple, you know, fountains, the bucket drummers who were there that got people to come, and merry-go-round. Just, it seems like even on the smallest scale, we could be doing more to draw those people.
Absolutely. And there was a year or two ago, the Boston Redevelopment Authority conducted a study to create a market district around those North End parks that would create some synergies between Haymarket, some of the established food venues that are already in the North End, with some other potential uses. That's precisely the kind of thing that would bring people down to the area from, you know, the suburbs and so forth.
Let's get some calls in here. Sean's calling from the Seaport District. Welcome to Radio Boston, Sean.
Hi, Magda. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Okay. I just moved into the Seaport area in January, and I love the space. I run up and down it every single day, and I love some of the uses. Like today, there's a farmer's market down by the area that was sort of the dead zone in the area that the reporter reported on. So I think the city's done actually a great job with that, the area. And I just think a lot of people don't know about it because most people travel underneath the park and just are unaware of what has happened to the Big Dig since it ended.
Yeah, it's the kind of place where unless you've actually physically walked through it, you may not even know it's there. But Sean, let me ask you, do you wish you had more neighbors, people who actually lived there along with you?
I do, and I mean, I think the city plan is to generally make the Seaport area more of an area where people will live. That's my understanding. That's why I kind of moved down there, that it's sort of a area in development. So we'll see what happens in the next, you know, 5 to 7 years, depending on the economy.
Can I ask Sean how old he is?
I'm 37.
Mm-hmm. So is that your kind of the target market for you, Tom Piper? Thanks so much for your call, Sean, by the way.
We have a city in which we attract just the cream of the crop in terms of students. It's tidal. We get about 500,000 students. They come here for the education, but they don't stay for the city. That's what I think the opportunity is. And if we could find a way, I mean, you know, you take Bob Campbell's idea of the housing. If we could somehow incent students to stay here with a house on the central artery, we might be able to fill some of these strategic locations along the site. It's a proposal, and we would attract people like Sean, who then would fall in love with the city, grow their families, and oh, by the way, the other big, if there is a missing tooth out there, it is economic development.
Mm-hmm.
You have an opportunity to grow the city. The Boston brand is unbelievable. Right at the center of it is the Greenway. We have kids here who come, don't stay. Let's keep them on, you know, and let's provide housing for them right along the Greenway. And, you know, if they stay, if they create jobs, if they do what Sean's doing.
Well, at this point in time, given the economy, you'd have to give them a house and a job.
The thing about Boston is that, when you think about the economy, it's not just the U.S. economy, it's global, and there is not a better brand in the world than this city's name.
Let's get to another call. Mark is calling from Dorchester. Welcome to Radio Boston, Mark.
Yes, hi, Magna. Boy, I'm glad to have this as a chance to get something off my chest a little bit. I had a business, my partner and I had a very successful business right on the corner of Rose Wharf there, Rudy's, and we were actually, it was providing a lot of the family type of things that were needed in that neighborhood. We're also the hub for Harvard Towers and Rose Wharf. Believe it or not, there is a thriving neighborhood there, and everybody knows who's, you know, what's going on and who's in the hospital and all that. And, you know, quite frankly, we were squeezed out because they see that they could get bigger rents. And, you know, it's kind of hard to make a turkey sandwich or a kid's meal for when you're paying $70 a square foot. And I think that's, you know, part of the shame there. We were there before when the highway was still there. When the highway came down and when the park was open, we were all excited about it until we got sticker shock and just couldn't run a business out of that area.
Mark, let me ask you, just to be clear, who's the they that you're talking about?
I'm sorry, could you repeat yourself?
Well, I mean, when you said that they squeezed you out in favor of getting folks who could pay higher rent, who's the they that you're speaking about?
Well, the landlord for Rose Wharf, and if you take a look at that, that space is sat empty for a year and a half, not exactly contributing to the Greenway since we left.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like you're saying that a once thriving neighborhood, including your restaurant, has kind of been exchanged for the ideal of maybe like a park for the rich or an exclusive kind of park?
Well, I guess that might be one way of putting it. I loved all my neighbors there, so I don't have anything against my former neighbors because I felt part of that neighborhood. But yes, I mean, if that's that is where it would be headed if the rents are such and such. I mean, draw your own conclusions, if you will.
Mark, thanks for your call. Let's turn that to Matthew Littell here. What would it take to attract small business owners who could generate a sense of community like Mark back to the Greenway?
Well, I think you have to actually create available space. There's some aspect in our guidelines that would encourage provision of small retail spaces of 2,000 square feet or less. That would be one way to sort of force new development to provide for these kinds of venues. Unfortunately, rising rents are sometimes a good sign and sometimes a bad sign. In this case, it is a sign of health that the city's achieved this terrific real estate asset, and property values are bound to go up around those things. But I do think that we have to look strategically at individual developments as they occur to try and maximize small venues that create these kinds of mini destinations that basically enrich sort of everyday urban life.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another call. We've got a lot of people who want to join us. Mark's calling from Brookline. Welcome to Radio Boston, Mark.
Yes, hello. It's nice to talk to you. Thanks for taking my call. I'm somebody who travels down to the Greenway many times a year, and I've also had the good fortune to travel to many other cities in North America and worldwide who've had similar opportunities to develop their waterfront. And, you know, what I think is that we're just sort of missing the sorts of venues and opportunities that draw people down to the Greenway, not just residents, but, you know, for example, a year-round public market, or recognizing that Boston's a four-season city. I mean, the spray pool is great, so is the farmer's market, but, you know, that's fine for 4 or 5 months of the year. What about the other 5 or 6 months? You know, an ice skating rink during the winter. I see that in other cities. If you look at what Toronto has done, if you look at what New York has done along the West Side Highway, if you look at, you know, Vancouver, Seattle with the wonderful public market and recent development, San Francisco along the Embarcadero, probably one of the best examples of really binding an area together. So I would just love to see the sort of vision in Boston that we've had in other cities.
Mark, thanks so much for your call. Tom Piper, I mean, our listeners have some fantastic ideas based on personal experience and their own travels. They seem to be doable for Boston, but yet we're not.
Well, they are doable, and they should be something that Boston engage in. The problem, again, I just go back to the size of the Central Arch. It's just huge. He mentioned, it's interesting, the Boston Central Artery is exactly the same size as the Embarcadero in San Francisco from the ballpark, from the Giants ballpark up to Pier 7. The problem, the difference is that on one side of it is the ocean. Mm-hmm. You know, and and the other side is the built-up city. The Central Artery is a green snake all by itself. It's huge, and there's just simply not enough people or development sites around it. Or it's a block away from the ocean. It has these built-in problems that unfortunately we've done to ourselves. It was the original decision to name the whole thing green, without understanding what the implications of that were. And the city didn't do this. This was a conspiracy done by the state without any really thought. This is what I call the old normal. It was a period where we thought we could afford anything. We'll just name everything green as if that was the real green.
Let me get a response from Matthew Littell on these built-in problems.
Well, the one opportunity which is made apparent by the first caller was that there are some 10 to 20 million square feet of planned or already permitted construction plans for the South Boston waterfront. It isn't a surprise to me that somebody living there right now would find their way to the Greenway for their morning jog. That's a huge outlet for development, and it's a symbol, both a symbol of the fact that we can't quite catch up yet because the economy is behind us, but also that there are these outlets for development that can, in fact, correct some of these problems.
Well, I'm afraid I'm going to actually have to wrap it up there, even though there's so much more to discuss on this. But listeners, you should know that the current zoning proposals are available and open for public comment. You can see a link to that at our website, wbur.org. But for now, let me thank Matthew Littell. He's principal at Utile Architecture and Planning. He helped put together those new proposals. Matthew Littell, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Tom Piper, principal research scientist at MIT's Department of Urban Studies and Planning. Tom Piper, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Magna.
There's more to come. I'm Magna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.